This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
What's good, everybody? You're back for your weekly dose of the Coast to Coast. I'm your host, the one with the most. We're going to give up the ghost and also give up some information. That was terrible, but I'm going to stick with it. We're going to give up some good information on Carolina basketball, what's happening on the recruiting scene, but also what's going on with this season right now. Tar Heels sitting at 4-2 after a win against North Carolina Central. I'm your host, Joey Powell. You're listening to the Inside Carolina Network of podcasts. With me, as always, are the two guys who are doing the real heavy lifting, who bring that knowledge to this game. Sean Moran, all the way on the left coast. Sherelle McMillan, down in the 7-0-4. Boys, what's going on?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for asking. Sherelle, how you doing?
I'm all right, man. Just ready.
Cowboys won today. I need you to turn up to 11.
I didn't want them to win, though. It's draft pick season. It's mock draft season. I want a top three pick. And I was like, why would you win?
Okay. Well, I'm not going to.
Minus 13, though, plus 240.
Not going to critique your fandom. Fellas, we got plenty to talk about. And before we do so, I want to make sure we give a shout out to our friends, our holiday homies over at Johnny T-Shirt. Really appreciate what they do for Inside Carolina, for the local community. We appreciate all of you guys supporting them. If you have not got your Christmas gifts yet, please, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. They have sales galore going on right now. You can deck your halls. You can fa-la-la your laws. Whatever you need with UNC gear, Johnny T-Shirt has it. I sat on the Inside Carolina live show on Saturday, which has been a ton of fun with Tommy Ashley and Chris Morris. But if Johnny T-Shirt doesn't make it, you don't need it. So hook up Johnny T-Shirt. Make sure you're patronizing them. Take care of them. Make sure you're getting the best gear for your wardrobe, for your home, for your man cave, for your man tower. Shout out to Don Callahan. Johnny T-Shirt is your place. JohnnyT-Shirt.com or on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. We appreciate all the support they give us and want to make sure that we're reciprocating that and paying it forward and or backward, either way. Guys, on the recruiting front, we did see a new offer this week. And Sherelle, I'll kick it to you first. Tell me about Deontay Green.
I'll tell you what I know. And, you know, because of what we've been talking about for, I guess, now the last 9 months, it's not a ton. So he is a 2022 forward from Asheville, North Carolina. He goes to school at Christ School, which is in Arden, just, you know, right down the street. And he's someone who's on UNC's radar. We did an intro story, Travis did, for the national site a few months ago, just kind of, you know, talking about him as a player. He is what a UNC source said is a skilled four, is kind of the way they see him. So his dad, will have a story out on Inside Carolina. Well, it'll be out by the time you read this. But if you read the story that we posted, his dad considers him kind of a combo forward, someone who can play for the four in a big lineup or the five in a small lineup. And I think, you know, it shows, again, that Roy Williams is trying to become more versatile while also having his preferred style of play. So I think he wants both now. Like, he definitely wants two bigs. But if you look at some of the offers in the 2021 class, you look at their signee, Dontre Styles, in the 2021 class, you look at guys like Green, you kind of see a trend over the last few years of, yes, he wants to play big, you know, big boy ball like they're playing now, but they also want to be able to mix in and play small if they need to. So that's what a lot of people like about Green, just that he has some perimeter skill, but he can also, you know, play kind of a true four.
Yeah, a lot of those four guys now, the big thing about the game going smaller as a whole and players getting more perimeter oriented. Is that four guy, whereas to 10 years ago, he's mainly playing in the post. Now you got to be able to guard on the perimeter, and that's a big thing. Sean, have you had a chance to see any of D'Onta Green's film, or have you had a chance to analyze his game whatsoever?
Well, first I thought Sherrill was going to say sees him as a 4-3, and I was getting worried where he was going with that one, but I think a 4-5 makes sense. Have not been able to watch a whole lot of him, but did get to watch him on film, and I think a skilled 4 makes sense. There was definitely some intriguing aspects about him without, you know, really being able to find out a whole lot of information online or, you know, events that he's done in the past besides this summer. But, you know, just in terms of watching the video, looks extremely long to go with his height. So you could tell he had some on the defensive end timing with block shots. Offensive end seemed to have a really compact, quick release, ability to shoot out from three, could handle the ball a little bit. And, you know, really like to get it, whether as a trailer or in the pick and roll, catch and shoot. A lot of highlights driving to the basket. You know, I think athletically that's where it looked like he could use some improvement. Not that explosive. Most everything was due to his length. And not the quickest guy either. So it's interesting, not that quick, but with his size, he could handle the ball so he could get to the basket. So definitely some intriguing aspects, but some aspects where he's definitely going to have to improve to be kind of a competing at the top level of the ACC. So I think he's ranked in the 60s by 24/7. You know, I think they had him 33 before the latest ranking. Obviously there've been some changes in the staff, but currently in the low 60s. And I think right now that makes sense just given his skill / athleticism. But if he's able to kind of work on his body a little bit, I think obviously you can't really teach the skill. So that can go a long way.
And I'll say too, just to add real quick, Joey, he is someone who is considering a reclassification. And, you know, for UNC fans, you know that those typically don't go UNC's way.
Right.
Now, with him, I think it's more of a family decision than anything. And I think they just have to kind of figure it out. But I don't think that will dissuade the UNC staff at all from continuing to recruit him. So that's something to keep an eye on too, is that he does have enough class credits and everything that if he wants to become a member of the 2021 class, he can.
That's a good nugget. Appreciate you sharing that. And Sean, to your point, still sounds like even if he's in the 2021 class, but right now as a member of the 22, he would have a chance to develop his body and work on some of those things that you pointed out that are probably some weaknesses in his game right now. Anything else on the national recruiting scene, Sean? I'll go to you first that we need to throw out to our listeners.
You know, nothing really. I think, you know, being in mid-December, the high school seasons, some have started, some are about to start, and some aren't happening at all. So I think now you'll start seeing some more, you know, some more action. I know Hunter Salas, for instance, I believe he started maybe a week or two ago. So unfortunately, we won't have all the fun holiday tournaments coming up, which are usually great spots to see some of the talent all in one place, whether that's South Carolina, Florida, et cetera. But I think, you know, with DeMarco Dunn, for instance, or Styles, you'll be able to start seeing a little bit more of them going forward.
Shrill, anything that we need to put on our radar, or are we good to move on to the current squad's ups and downs?
Yeah, I think we can move on. It's quiet, man. And I don't know if it's going to really, you know, it's going to pick up some, like Sean said, but it's just not going to be what it was with campus visits. And,
right.
You know, this North Carolina took advantage for a few years of juniors being able to take official visits starting on January 1st of their spring semester. They did that more than anyone. And that's how they got some commitments back in 14 and 15. And they had started doing that again here in the recent past. So, that's out the window this year. So they're not going to be able to use that. So it's a lot of this is going to be guesswork, man, with the 2021 and 2022 classes. You're going to see who can scout and who can't, because there's just not a lot of film. There's not live events. There's not action. It's kind of, you talk to people, you get a feel for whether or not a kid can play, and you trust your scouting and your eval, and you see what happens in 2 or 3 years.
I think, you know, one thing to add regarding Salas, we've kind of talked about UNC and Kentucky. I think the games we've been watching just showcase how important a player like Salas could be for next year, given kind of the scoring ability and, you know, kind of a secondary ball handler. And I know we've talked about Kentucky as one of the leaders, but Kentucky hasn't really been doing themselves any favors. And with all the guards that they have right now, I mean, obviously some are going to be one and done, but there could be a little bit of a backlog there. So once again, I think we'll be talking a lot more about Salas as the time goes on, just because I think his importance is going to grow for UNC in this class.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to make, and is a good segue into talking about the current squad, about who's on the roster now based on expectations 3 months ago, who may still be around versus who may be moving on. And guys, a busier week than we would have expected last week at this time. North Carolina added NC Central, played them on Saturday in the Smith Center after playing in Iowa City on Tuesday against Iowa, in a game that, you know, a lot of Tar Heel fans, you know, myself included, I don't like to watch the Tar Heels lose. I think most folks are just not really happy to see Carolina take an L. But there were some things to be, I think, happy about and optimistic about coming out of that game, just about the way the team fought and the way some of the younger guys played and battled. And then Saturday happened against North Carolina Central, and I think a lot of that goodwill may have gone out the window just from some clunky play, not a lot of rhythm, and the turnovers. I just feel like this team is very much susceptible to kicking the ball quite a bit. And Sherrill, I'll go to you first. Can these turnovers be fixed?
Yeah, I think so. I do wonder if Saturday, and again, not excuse making, just trying to explain, I wonder if Saturday was a young team who played really well for stretches against Iowa, thinking, okay, we turned the corner, we're feeling good about ourselves. We went up to Iowa. Yeah, we lost the game, but we showed ourselves well. And then you get to Saturday, you're like, North Carolina Central, you know, we should beat them. And I wonder if that was part of, even though the players would never admit it, and even though the coaching staff, I'm sure, you know, kind of beat into their head, like, hey, this team can come in here and beat you because you're not right. playing well. I do wonder if some of that came through with the play that we saw for probably 30 minutes of the 40 minutes against NC Central. You know, outside of that, there, you know, there's a good stretch there in the second half, and then they gave it all away at the end. But I wouldn't say encouraged, but I think there were some things to be positive about from that NC Central game. Despite the turnovers, I think Caleb Love, I personally think he's starting to figure some things out. And the turnovers are just still those guys, just their heads are just moving so quickly in their thinking and the processing. And I hate to be repetitive, but it's just the way it is at Carolina. And it's how it's always been. And as long as Roy Williams is there, it's how it's going to be, is that there's just some, you know, paralysis by analysis for these guys when they're getting into the system, and just take time for them to mold, you know, their natural basketball instincts with what the system wants them to do. And we're seeing that play out live more so because there are two freshman yep. guards than there's one freshman guard. And then there's a wing who we will talk about a little bit, who's not playing up to his talent level, frankly. So I think all that combined gives you an uneven performance like you saw on Saturday. But the fact that they're just so big, it does give them not a large margin of error, but a somewhat margin for error just because of the way they rebound and because they're so much bigger than everybody else.
I love that you pointed that out about Caleb Love. It does seem like the game is slowing down a little for him. He didn't seem to be pressing as much against Central. He did seem to be more engaged on the defensive end against Central, which is more than we can say for some of the other starters, as you mentioned. Sean, I'll throw to you, but I also want to leave some of the meat on the bone here for Rel, because I know this is a kind of a sore spot for him. But these slow starts are becoming a trend as well, and I think that's a little concerning. Just from a standpoint of why are they struggling to start with a certain energy level to begin a game, but then the third quarter, when you break it out time-wise, I know there aren't quarters in college basketball, but when you break it out time-wise, that third 10-minute segment is really when they're making their hay. What can you make out of that, Sean? How do you feel about it? What can you make out of it? Is there a way to kind of shift that energy maybe to the start of the game so they're not digging out of a hole?
It's a great question. And I mean, you look at Iowa, it's not like they changed the lineup going into the second half. And, you know, for the very first possession, you just saw the energy and the focus that they had from the very first possession. And, you know, the first 10 minutes, they outscore Iowa by 11, excuse me. And really they get it. They make it a game in the first 3 minutes, and then they're going back and forth for another eight or so before they take the lead. And then as soon as they kind of take the lead and Playtech scores, then they kind of get the knockout punch. But then you go to NC Central, and once again, it's just slow plodding and lack of energy. And I don't know. I mean, you look at the team, do they need a lineup change? Is that going to do anything? I mean, you're starting three guys from a team that was the worst team in the ACC last year. Maybe, I mean, it's worth a shot, because I think right now the main thing is offensively. They're struggling to get baskets. And right now they have a ceiling of being able to make 6 3-pointers a game, maybe. With RJ Davis being really the only guy, and NC Central didn't shoot the ball that well. So, you know, could it be helpful to have a Playtech who has played very well the last two games, kind of in the lineup, stretch the floor, has been shooting the ball well, just to see if that opens the floor a little bit, and then you bring Leakey in off the bench, or, you know, Walton possibly, but I don't think that's going to solve everything. So I guess that's a long way of saying, I don't know, but it is frustrating. And I think it goes back to just the ceiling on this team offensively is not very high with the current lineup. And I think it would be nice to have another one or two of these NC Central games just to have gotten a little more reps for Puff or Walton, et cetera, just to see what they can do and get them acclimated, because, you know, every team's not going to hit 17 threes like Iowa did, but they're going to hit 10 and you're hitting three. I mean, every game you're going to be at disadvantage, and you're putting so much pressure on your post players to perform at a top level that it's not sustainable to, have a strong ACC record.
Yeah. Rel, I want to kick the same thing to you. And you and I had this conversation in a different medium about the fact that there's no fans in the stands, and, you know, why are the coaches having trouble generating energy? I think Sean hit on a good point about, you know, do they need somebody else off the bench to generate that energy? But how do you feel about it? Is there a way around this?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think if we ask Roy Williams, because I frankly, when a team does something, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 games in a row, and it's something that it isn't, let me rephrase. When that happens 6 or 7 times in a row, I think the coaching staff bears the ultimate responsibility for correcting it. And I just think it's a matter, like you said, it's just different. Everything about this year is unique. And we talked all offseason about how guys were going to have to create their own energy. And maybe the coaching staff is going to have to create that energy through, I don't know if it's lineup changes. I don't know if it's, you know, letting guys dance like Danny Green did, you know, and before the games. There just has to be something different, because right now it's we've seen it too many times. If it was one game or two games or three games that they
it's
were
a
down
thing now.
Yeah, it's a thing now. And, you know, whenever something becomes a thing, then also you have to worry about up here. I'm pointing to my head for those listening on podcasts, because then it's like it's something that the team is aware of, that they know about, and it starts getting in their head like, oh, here we go again, getting down 12-3 or getting down 21-9 or whatever it may be. So, if we asked Roy Williams, he would say, well, if I knew the answer, I would do it.
Right.
That's kind of where it's at. I just think maybe they do need to try something different. And it might not be something as dramatic as a lineup change. It just might be, it could be
different
anything.
Color Gatorade, man.
Yeah,
it could be
staying in the locker room for 5 more minutes or playing the music, you know, a couple of decibels louder. It could be some small thing that we're not thinking of, but it has to change, because once you get into the ACC schedule, I tell you what, if you get down, you know, 31-15 in Raleigh or something, those people are going to be, well, I guess there's no people there, so never mind. That ruins my argument. But, you know, you just can't do that.
You're playing with fire, and I think that's a salient point.
That's the point. And it's been too many times where they've done that. And I just – that is worrisome, and it's a trend, and it has to change for them to be the team they want to be.
Well, and so I love the way you kind of led with that. I think – it shows some resilience from the squad that they're able to bounce back, and that they're able to claw back into games. And most of them, they've actually come back and taken the lead, which is that's remarkable and is something that we couldn't have said about last year's squad. But what's frustrating is, to your point, Sherelle, is that these games aren't played in a vacuum. And at some point, you may not be able to come back like that. So let's try to see if we can find a way from the coaching staff somehow to get these guys not to dig themselves that kind of a hole to start a ball game.
And let me jump in and just, again, talking about a young team, that's another thing that you have to learn about a young team, is that they're still figuring out what it takes and how much energy it takes to compete at the Division I / ACC level every single night. And in high school, maybe you could get away with a school who wasn't as good, or a school with a poor record, or you knew didn't have as good of players as your team had. Maybe you could get away with that, get down 20 and still win by 20. That's not going to happen now in Division I / the ACC. I mean, they were two possessions away from going to overtime with North Carolina Central.
Yes.
And that's not to disparage North Carolina Central. That just says that North Carolina didn't play well for, you know, huge stretches of that game. So I think it's partly something that the coaching staff needs to look at, and also just another side effect of having a very young team.
Yeah, and teams with older guards is something that they've seen a lot of to start this season, and I think it will continue to phase them until they can mature as the season goes along. Sean, I want to throw this out to you. One of the positives from the game against Central and from the season as a whole is I think Carolina fans are seeing a nice jump and a nice set of improvement from Armando Bacot, which I think had to happen. I think we've talked about how bringing in more talent in the post is going to challenge him more, because they just didn't have the bodies to push him last year. But something else I've seen is he's gotten a lot more efficient with his movement. He's gotten a lot more compact with his moves. And I think it's making the game a little easier for him, which anytime you've got that luxury of being able to get different sorts of effect from your different players off the bench in the post, I think that's a nice little arsenal for Roy Williams and his staff. How do you feel like Armando has been able to improve his game, and what do you think he can continue to improve upon as the season goes along?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of touched on the very end of last week's podcast with Bacot of how he did look improved. A lot of that was a little bit on his body, and as you said, the compact moves, where last time he was always bringing the ball down, trying to go to the basket. He was getting stripped almost every time, and he wasn't really making quick moves. And now, you know, here he is, once again, kind of when he catches the ball, he's not really thinking. He's just reacting, and it's kind of a very quick move. Body-wise, I mean, once again, there have been a few times where, you know, he was really just kind of hanging in the air on a two-hand dunk against NC Central. And for him, I mean, he can now athletically kind of compete at a top level. So I think for him, you know, the one thing that I would like to see a little more of, and I think whether it's him or Brooks, it needs to happen to kind of open things up. But, you know, he caught the ball from around 17 or 18, hesitated and kind of dribbled and then shot a jump shot from the free throw line and made it.
Hit the jumper. Yeah.
He hit the jumper, which probably the first jumper I've seen him hit maybe outside of the paint in some time. And if you have either him or Brooks, I can just knock down a short little jumper, that could go a long way, because I mean, those guys are just getting, you know, in the post, 2-3 guys on them, and it's hard for them to literally do anything. So I think Armando's been playing very well. You know, obviously Iowa got into a little bit of foul trouble, and offensively didn't have as great of a game, but that's kind of the nice thing about having some depth at that position. But I would say, yeah, he's been definitely a bright spot so far for UNC.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Sherelle, I want to ask you a question that I think has also been something that was really unexpected, and that's how much better the spacing on the floor seems to be when Andrew Platek is out there. Maybe I just noticed that in the Central game, but specifically in the Central game, I feel like the post players were able to maneuver a little bit because the spacing was better when Platek was on the floor. Now, all of a sudden, you have Andrew Platek triggering an 8-0 run. Is Platek becoming a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, we thought that he would play. Now, whether or not I thought he'd be shooting 40% from three at this point in the season, I don't know, because he shot it so poorly, you know, last year, really, shot it so poorly in extended minutes. And to Sean's point, what he's been saying this entire season is that, you know, it's hard to have two non-shooters in the game at the same time when you're playing two bigs. Like, right, you can have one non shooter, but if you have two, it just clogs things up so much in the middle and forces you to have guys who maybe shouldn't be taking a lot of shots. If Platek can continue just to hit a couple per game, that's really all this team needs. They don't need to become, you know, a team that takes 30, 40 threes a game. That's not in this unit's DNA. That's not who this team is going to be. There's one thing, and I'm going back and forth. There's one thing about this team we know. We know kind of what it's going to be. We know what it is. We know its style. So if Platek can just do what he's doing, I think he's been a pleasant surprise. If RJ Davis can continue to improve, and if Caleb can just increase his shooting some, he doesn't have to become a 40% shooter. That gives you three guys who can knock down shots. And if they're going to play together, then that, you know, like Sean said, that opens things up a ton for Bacot and Sharp and Kessler and Brooks to go in there and do their thing. And also, you know, the best time for offensive rebound is a long rebound. So even if you miss a wide open three, we talk about being willing shooters. Even if you miss a wide open three, the chances are, I think they're up around 25, 26%.
Yeah.
Rebounding their misses. Chances are, you know, North Carolina is going to get an offensive rebound, you know, a good amount. So there really isn't a bad shot for those guys if they're open. So just take it. And I think that's something that they have to just keep pushing to those guys is, look, don't be scared. You know, don't hesitate. Play basketball. Take the shot. Good things will happen if you just take the shot.
Yeah, it sounds like that Coach Davis, Hubert Davis, said some of that to the team before the second half against North Carolina Central. And I think you make a great point with a front line that's rebounding one out of four misses. You take those odds, and all you have to do is have guys on the outside that aren't afraid to shoot. That's one of the things that are a nice surprise, I think, about Kerwin Walton and Puff Johnson so far, is that those guys at least look like they're not afraid to shoot when it's in there, which will, to an extent, and to your point, keep a defense honest. Now we've talked about some improvement and how Andrew Platek has kind of helped things for the Tar Heels on the perimeter. We're still not seeing some things from somebody that should be an upperclassman and a leader, and specifically on the defensive end. Rel, I'll throw it to you first. This isn't going to be a Barry Leakey situation, but I do think the Tar Heels staff and the team need a little more out of him in a couple of different areas.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Leakey would say the same thing. You know, on whenever the topic of Leakey comes up, as we've said numerous times, he's kind of divisive among the fan base. I would say that when he does things well, I think people should recognize that. And when he doesn't, the people who defend him need to recognize that as well and be fair. And to be fair, he did not play great. The last two games, he's not played great defense. And I think he knows that.
A lot of chasing.
I think he's been, you know, that first step sometimes gets him. And he's able to recover sometimes because of his length, but there are times that penetration that he allows just opens up the floor for shooters and for offensive rebounds. And it just can be really, really harmful for North Carolina's defensive efforts when that happens. So, you know, he's got to play better. You know, I think against Stanford and Texas, I thought he played really well, minus a couple of turnovers and a couple of bad shots. But I think if he's not going to be kind of the defensive ace that the staff wants him to be and that he has shown he can be at times, and if he's going to continue to turn the ball over, then they're going to have to reassess what we talked about last week, which is how much more how much higher does the ceiling go for the team if they say, you know what, let's give Puff and Walton those minutes, let them grow. They're shooters, they can open up spacing, but they might be, you know, not nearly as good defenders, not nearly as good rebounders, and maybe they don't have the poise that Leaky does in certain situations. So they have to weigh that. And, you know, I don't expect Roy Williams to make a change anytime soon, but you know, I do think Leaky needs to play better, and he, you know, he'd be the first to tell you that. So it's not, we're not disparaging him or anything.
Yeah, and some of the things too, I think that some of the mistakes he's making are some of the same things you would probably get from a Puff Johnson or a Kerwin Walton. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, upperclassmen for Central were just simply beating him when he would overplay the passing lanes and going backdoor on him and just getting out of position. And that's tough to see from somebody who's been in the program as long as Leaky has. Sean, one thing you feel like Leaky Black could probably make a small tweak in and improve his game and thus improve the prospects for the Tar Heels?
I think he does a few, you know, defensive rebounding. He is very good at times at coming in, grabbing the ball, grabbing a board and starting a break.
Triggering a break.
I don't think he's, you know, so you say like in football, he's really, you know, they're really good, you know, outside of the 20s, but they're from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line. And he's really good basically getting to that 20-yard line. And if he can do that just to increase the tempo, I think is a benefit. I don't think he's a great passer or finisher, so if he can kind of give it up beforehand, but once again, that gets the team playing faster. You know, there's a few times in the Iowa game, you know, he hit a three from the left wing, didn't think about it, just shot it, clean look, hit it. The other time, he pushed the ball up, passed it to Caleb Love for an assist. So there's things he does very, or he can do very well, but once again, he was kind of handed the starting spot last year just out of, you know, there wasn't anybody else, and he hasn't really been truly pushed. And I feel, you know, if he's coming off the bench, he can offer a lot of what he does in smaller minutes versus him playing 30 plus minutes, because you're not going to shoot the ball, then everybody's just going to sag on the post. And once again, you're playing 4-on-5 offensively. This team, at least they need to at least have a potential for increasing their play. And I think if he's coming off the bench, he can still do a lot of things he does well. But now you're kind of limiting the sample size. So in terms of what can he do to improve? Once again, I think it's just, you know, offensively a little bit more movement and attacking and trying to make things happen. Because we did see it against Stanford and Texas when he was being aggressive. Yeah. He can make plays happen, but if you're just out on the wing, not being aggressive, then it hurts everybody.
Really would love to see it just click for him, because I think it would just, like you guys were saying, would just improve so much of some small things and some nuance for the overall game for the team. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap this one?
I'll throw one thing out there because we haven't really mentioned his name, but Dayron Sharp. I mean, he just kind of brings a smile to my face at any time he's playing, because he, you know, we talk about energy and he brings so much energy, whether it's on the floor or on the bench. And even the Iowa game where he was going faster than his mind was processing, but the mistakes he was making, you're kind of like, all right, like he's playing so hard where you're kind of fine with them. But I mean, once again, he was giving Garza trouble just with his length and, yeah, and size. You know, there was one time he made a move on a baseline and, you know, he got ended up getting blocked, but the move he made was really good. And then
talk about the spin he made to the baseline. Yeah,
the spin baseline. And I thought he was about to two-hand dunk, but, you know, Garza got him from behind. And, you know, even NC Central, really strong offensive rating during the game. And once again, this past week we've seen some of the ESPN and SIs of the world start to put him in their top 15. So yeah, who knows how, you know, is he here next year? That's a question, but at least for now, he's getting better every game. And he is playing so hard when he gets in. So he's always fun to watch, because he's going to make something happen, whether it's rebounding, blocking shots, or getting a basket down low.
Shout out to all the other fellow dads out there. I think Dayron has some Wreck-It Ralph in him, right? Just like not just from the physicality, but just like everything is so smash physical. Like Hansborough had the motor, but Dayron has just the physicality about everything that he does. And we had heard, and you guys had mentioned on this pod before, that he just wants to dunk everything. And you can see that. And I'm surprised he hasn't taken more souls than he has so far, but I think it's coming. Sherelle?
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, the lobs that we saw in the second half against NC Central, Caleb started to figure it out. And that was because Dayron Sharp, you know, helped him. And when you have someone like that, you can lean on those kind of things to get you into the flow of the game. Now, Dayron, he doesn't need to get into the flow of the game. He just comes in like he's born, right? He's like the Kool-Aid guy who just comes bursting in. And, like, you know, that's such an old reference. I'm sorry. But that's
not Family Guy brought it back. You're okay.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Good. But to Sean's point, you know, I'm sure Roy Williams is tempted, because he said he was starting him in the second half or starting him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's very tempting, but I wonder if that would diminish the bench and the energy that he brings in when he comes in, because the team, honestly, man, and I think all of Adrian's Atkinson are kind of our stat guru. All of his numbers show just how much better of a team they are when Sharp is in the game. You know, Sean kind of sends notes to our little Slack group after each game. And every time, you know, without fail, when you look at offensive rating, Sharp is either number one or number two. So just the more he can play, I don't envy Roy Williams trying to figure it out, because he does have, you know, I think four big men who have skills and who show promise. But, you know, Sharp so far has acquitted himself so well that I think he probably has to play more minutes. So that's what we talked about at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
The six best players on the team probably maybe are guards and bigs. And the issue was just going to be trying to figure out the wings and the shooting. So we are where we thought we'd be at this point. I'm just curious to see if things change.
You know, and we were talking about the Central game being such a clunker. I think history will also show you, too, that most of the time during that lull of after exams or right around exams to the holidays, Roy Williams teams usually have a stinker of a game against a lesser talented non-conference opponent. Am I making that up, or is that usually a thing?
It sounds right. I remember a lot of Saturday games where they get down to Davidson 25-10 and have to come back, you know, that kind of thing.
But yeah, I feel like that happens quite often, but – fellas, appreciate the insight as always. Appreciate you guys bringing your A games. Hopefully the Tar Heels will start bringing some A games soon. Again, as you guys have mentioned today, the flashes are starting to come on. We're seeing instances of it. We're seeing a lot of good things. We're seeing some things too that should probably be fixed, and we're sure the coaching staff is working on. And again, shout out to the free throw coach, because he's making all the difference. But for Sherelle McMillan, for Sean Moran, I'm Joey Powell. We appreciate you guys listening to the Coast to Coast podcast on InsideCarolina.com. Wherever you get this information, this content, please be sure to stop, rate, review us. And if you're not subscribed, already subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're getting everything that Inside Carolina is putting out, because we put a lot of energy into it. We want to make sure we're bringing you guys the best content, because we appreciate you, our listeners/viewers/subscribers. Once again, I want to thank Johnny T-Shirt. Want to thank you guys for listening. Want to thank Sherelle and Sean for being a part of the show. And we will catch you guys next time. This has been the Coast to Coast Podcast. Late.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.